tell me this, do the arts mean anything to you? Do you get up in the morning and think, oh, there isn't enough funding for the arts? Never crosses my mind. And then you'll attend something like a play in the MAC and you see 16, as I saw last week, young people on the stage with something they created themselves. And you think to yourself, what a brilliant developmental strategy that is for confidence, for showing off ability, for having on the CV. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. That's one small example of enjoying the arts. But the arts, of course, come in many forms. And the budgets are being compromised. There is a massive shortfall in terms of money, not just for the arts, but for the running of this country generally. The arts are being hit. The convener of Arts Matter NI is Conor Shields, and he's on the line. Conor, how difficult is it financially at the moment?
These are very difficult times, Frank. I appreciate you taking the call this morning. Yesterday's budget reflects a 5.5% cut to the running costs of organisations, 43 of which are losing money, 7 of which seem to be have lost near enough the bulk of all their money. And so the trajectory for them is only down, unfortunately.
You see, in my ignorance, I noticed that the Opera House has had funding cut by £110,000. I got the impression that the Opera House ran on its own abilities to put bums on seats, but could it not survive like that?
Well, I think this picture says more about the arts sector. Without picking out individual organisations, you all have very different business plans and different ways of working. If you've been to the Opera House, you know it's a very successful institution that has plenty of people going in. So the Arts Council have adjudged that to be a means for them to maintain their revenue. But I'm sure they are smarting this morning from a massive cut, as indeed are 42 other organisations, albeit that have been cut less. But, you know, like Verbal Arts Centre in Derry has had a 25% cut, as far as I can see. Cathedral Quarter Arts Festival that many of your listeners will be attending in only a month's time have lost £20,000 just a month before they go live with really a signature festival for Northern Ireland. These are really difficult times. When you think back only 10 years, Frank, the Arts Council anticipated getting £26 million to support the arts in Northern Ireland. And now we see less than £8.5 million actually going out from revenue funding to the arts. And the disparity between what we get in Northern Ireland compared to what we see the Republic getting, Wales, England, like we're getting less than half. And in fact, just yesterday, the Republic of Ireland announced £1.2 billion of additional investment in arts and culture for a project that they call Project Ireland 2040. So we're falling so far behind, and the impact on our communities will be massive. You talk about confidence building, you talk about the developmental aspect to the arts, but like 85% of our population has had contact with the arts last year. If you think that we're being cut by this level, that's bound to plummet, and it'll affect those that have least opportunity the most. You know, those communities and those families that can't find the additional money, there'll be less opportunity for them to engage. And I suppose that's the real tragedy about this.
Now, you did mention, you know, you don't really want to talk about individual venues or whatever, but I see the MAC has received over £1.1 million this year compared to just over £900,000 last year. That's an increase. Is that because they've been in the news recently about finding it difficult to make ends meet, or is that totally separate?
Well, no, they have been struggling with their costs. I know that, and I don't think that's news to anybody. But in fact, they got an uplift last year, which would have brought their full monies last year to £1.197 million. So in fact, in real terms, they've had a £77,000 cut this year, ironically, even though there's new money coming in. There are very few winners in this. You know, the MAC, like a huge institution like that, seems to be struggling. But, you know, that's the case for 100 organizations. All of them are looking very hard at how they pare back their operations in order to avoid deficits. And there, all these organizations are governed by trustees. These are charitable organizations with personal liability of trustees managing them. So some very hard decisions will have to be made over the coming weeks for the year ahead, Frank.
And how important is it to fund the Ulster Orchestra? Because they're always referred to and they always seem to be facing challenges.
Well, I think having an orchestra is totemic. It says something about what your cultural ambition is. Now, you know, there will be some who will say that, you know, organizations like the orchestra are taking too much, and indeed they do. They take a massive slice, you know, £2 million out of the £8.5 million that's going out. That's a big contribution from the public purse, undoubtedly. But I think for if we have ambition for Northern Ireland to be a culturally vibrant place, to be attractive to citizens and to visitors alike, to say something about our ambition for the arts, you know, we need to invest in our culture adequately and properly, and not just begrudge and question funding. We all need to see further funding in the arts. This is completely. This level of cuts is far too much. It's not sustainable for the arts, and nowhere else is doing it. As I say, you know, in the Republic of Ireland, you can anticipate £12 a head. Here, we've dropped to less than £5. In terms of government spend, that's a penny a day a person. Like this can't go on. And we need political champions. We need cultural champions out there fighting for the arts, because all of us in every community, no matter what you want to attend, this is a closing down of opportunity for all of us.
People, of course, will be nodding in agreement with you until they start thinking about an education budget or a health budget or any of the other budgets that are indeed of prime importance to every family. Sometimes it is hard to convince the majority of people that the arts are crucial to everyone, and they see it as a pecking order, and arts are pretty far down that order for some people.
Yeah, and I can appreciate that, but the arts budget is the smallest budget line of all. When you think of £8.5 million compared to the billions and billions that go into all the other crucial sectors, vital sectors, the arts is the tiniest budget. I would be the first to say if we were undermining a health budget, but we're clearly not. And in fact, what we're trying to do is complement health spending. The little money that we get, we will be supporting public benefit activity in hospitals, in schools, in residential homes, in our community centres. We're trying to support a whole range of different communities. And indeed, we understand the problems that there are in maintaining healthcare, for example, in education in our communities. That's why so many of our arts programs really dedicate their resources to helping people, and in fact, helping the most marginalised. 79%, the Arts Council reckons 79% of these monies actually go into areas where, you know, of the highest deprivation and the highest marginalisation because of the outreach work that people do. So we're really, we understand that. We understand their straitened times, but this budget represents 0.07% of the spend of the block grant.
Yeah, you make a very good point about, you know, health and well-being and mental health as well. And I'm just going back again to my most recent experience where you see 16 or 17 young people who've spent many weeks being vibrant, being together, producing a play and putting it on for you. And then you read in the paper about those who are depressed or who are facing challenges or are using drugs. And you think if more people were channeled towards where those 16 young people were the other night, they'd be in a much better place. Opportunities like that need to be presented as often as possible, because it's like sport, it's like recreation. The arts can be very easily linked to good health and mental health as well, and general well-being. So it is a strong point that you make. Are jobs at risk here?
And from cradle to grave as well, Frank.
Of course, not just for the young, just for our teenagers.
Yeah. If you look at the impact that the arts have for our older population in terms of fighting dementia, in terms of helping with mobility, in terms of keeping social isolation at bay, you know, really offering people something to come together, to do reminiscence work, to start thinking about their own community, to say that they're here and they won't stay here for a lot longer. The arts is the way to do that, and we see that the arts being employed in that way right across the board in communities right across the north. So
we're almost out of time, Connor, but I agree with you on that. Sorry. Just briefly, are jobs at risk here?
Oh, absolutely. When you think of, like, this is a big employer, the arts sector. We're talking about 6,000 jobs. We're talking about 4,500 volunteers who work for organizations as well. Many of those will be looking at protective notices today, and the organizations will be looking at how they're going to pare back, because this is core funding. These are the salaries and the rents and so on, and electricity to keep organizations going. So there'll be lots of chief executives and trustees of organizations looking at jobs and seeing where they might have to make cuts. So you have to remember as well, this is a significant contributor to our local economy. Like, over £200 million is generated additionally into the Northern Irish economy through the arts. And you know, if you attack the investment of the arts, if you cut it, you're cutting that impact in our local economy as well. You're cutting the offering that we have for tourists. You know, this all has a ripple effect, and it'll have an impact on jobs.
Okay. Connor, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Connor Shields, convener of Arts Matters NI. And I know some of you will be saying, typical Frank, you know, sort of giving this man a free run. But I agree with a lot of what he is saying. And yes, I work in the arts sector myself and all of that. But it is good for society. It is good for community. It is good for individuals. It is good for groups. And it is constantly being cut. And I know there are other budgets, there are other worries, there are other concerns. And there are some people who have no attachment to the arts, or at least feel they don't have any attachment, and find a lot of it to be highbrow and all of that. But don't focus on the highbrow. Think about the general arts. Think about its many platforms and its many examples. And maybe you might come around to lobbying your local politician and talking to them about the arts. But in the meantime, we don't have a government, and I'm sick kicking the government here on the programme. So eventually, just maybe, they'll go back and run the country and try to run it properly. Jim's got a point to make. Jim, who is on line three, let me go to Jim, who's on line three as opposed to line two, and we will get him here to have a conversation with us this morning. 90 333 105, 077 66 105 105, whatever's on your mind, of course. We're always happy to hear from you on the programme. Let's have a word with Jim. Jim, go ahead.
Good morning, Frank. Thanks for taking the call. Frank, I couldn't agree more with your own comments and the comments of your previous caller there. I'm speaking from experience. I've got a young son who's involved in our local theatre at the Mill, which, by the way, is so well managed by the likes of Bernard and Tina there. They do a fantastic job with the young people. But my young son, he was always a confident wee lad. He was never suffering from a lack of confidence or anything like that. But he got involved about 2 or 3 years ago with the musical theatre, mainly through the theatre at the Mill there in Newton Abbey. Now, since he has got involved and he has been taking part in various musical productions, apart from the enjoyment side of it and seeing your child perform on stage or whatever, Frank, but it's the whole well-being, because I've seen our son, who was always a confident wee boy, move from a position of confidence to greater confidence. And he's able to, you know, that has a spin-off effect, and that he's able to do public speaking now, and so on and so forth. So I think, you know, if the funding's been cut, I mean, as you mentioned, there's the whole mental well-being associated with the arts, because the arts will do, education's important, critical, as is health and all those other more important issues. But equally important, Frank, is the fact of the well-being, sense of well-being, that, you know, being involved in the arts that will give our young people.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing. I've seen it myself on my own side.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying, Jim. We're, not everyone's agreeing with any of us here, because there have been three voices who've been in favour of the arts on the programme this morning, including my own being very understanding of budgets being constantly cut. But this text reflects some of the other comments that are coming through. Frank, we're talking about closing schools today, and yes, that's one of the issues in the news as well. People dying for lack of care. Who cares about the arts? A first world problem, says Stephen. Well, Stephen, hopefully you've been listening over the last 10 minutes and you'll realise that it isn't necessarily a first world problem. It is actually part of the cure when it comes to those who may be dying for the lack of care. The arts does help a community. It does help a society, and it helps people generally. But I understand when budgets are stretched, you have, as I said to our previous caller, our contributor, who was indeed Connor, who was making it very clear on behalf of the arts that the arts needs greater finance. I did make it clear to him there is a pecking order and the arts are well down it in the opinions of so many people. Now, Kira has a point that she wants to make as well. Good morning, Kira.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm very good, Kira. What's on your mind?
For the last couple of weeks, we have been protesting against the closure of 7 special needs schools across Belfast. It seems to me, you know, I've been in meetings with People Before Profit and the DUP. We have sat with, you know, the head of the Education Authority, the Education Authority.
Kira, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second because your line is very, very bad. Just see if you can do give your phone a little shake or bring it up closer to your mouth. It's just a very poor line, but go ahead.
Sorry, is that a bit better?
That's a bit better, yep.
Yeah, it's just like we've been in meetings with Claire Mangan over the course of this period of time. There's been no clarification. The one question on everybody's lips is where the funding is coming from for these state-of-the-art schools. There's been no clarification given on where the money's coming from. The budgets are slacking at the minute. Schools are struggling and they're on their knees at present minute. In these 7 special needs schools, one school in particular that I have been in have begged and pleaded with the Educational Authority about more therapies, increased therapies. It's fallen on deaf ears. And, you know, the closed 7 special needs schools is absolutely immorally and respectfully wrong. It shouldn't be happening. But this just is seen to be nothing more and nothing less but a cost-cutting exercise to save money. So the Educational Authority is already in £24 million in debt. And they're perceiving the Bill 7 special needs schools, and nobody knows where the money's coming from, and no clarification in any meeting at all whatsoever.
But it's only been muted recently, this, Kira. It's not something that they're putting the shovels in the ground to do. Am I right on that? It's something that they're consulting on.
They're consulting. But the one thing to highlight, everybody is totally against it. But, you know, as I say, when people don't have clarification on where the money and the spend is going to come from, it raises a massive concern about how much more debt is these schools going to go into if they proceed ahead with proposals.
And does it put you in personally in a position? Have you got a child who attends one of the schools?
Personally, my child is in attendance in one of the schools. My child is maybe on the next sector because of her age into another school. Parents are now in a position they don't know where they're going to place their child, because if they place their child in one school, say next year, you know, they don't know in 5 years' time, are they going to have to uproot that child to move that child to another building? You know, there's an awful lot to be said, and I could take up hours of your time speaking about this subject. But I just think, you know, everybody needs to be fundamentally aware, you know, where's the money coming from? Is the money going to put us into more debt and lack some more therapies for these particular schools? You know, and these questions need to be answered. And so far to date, with meetings, as I say, with People Before Profit and the DUP, there has been no clarification on where the money is going to come from.
Okay, Kira, this is, I think, the second or third time we've discussed this on the programme, but you are, as a mother, saying what people have said to us before. Now, the Education Authority, they've, so many things on their plate at this present moment in time in relation to schools, whether they be the schools that are in the news today or indeed the special needs schools that we were talking about, the amalgamation and the creation of these new super schools in the future. Certainly an emotive issue for the parents and for the children who are either established in the schools or indeed may become established in one of our very well-known special needs schools in the general area. Kira, thank you for speaking to us about it. Michelle has a point to make. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Frank.
Yes, Michelle. I think you're talking about the funding, is that right?
Yes, I do want to bring a background to the arts and of every sympathy for all budget cuts. I think where I'm coming from as a parent, I have a daughter now who's 18, who's very interested in dance and drama, has been very fortunate to be able to take part in a lot of things at Theatre at the Mill. She's worked with Peter Corey as well. She's auditioning for a couple of things, and they've all been local, you know, local sort of amateur things, and she's doing very, very well. But unfortunately for her, to study dance at university, she has to leave Northern Ireland to go to, it's a university just outside Liverpool she's accepted an offer for. And she attends quite a large dance school. We live in a rural area, a dance school that's run locally by a girl who really doesn't charge very much and puts a lot of her work and effort into teaching these young children to dance. And they, living in a rural community, and my daughter's an only child as well, it has enhanced her life so much. And it just makes me really sad that our talent then all goes across the water and possibly may never come back. And we are very fortunate to have institutions like Theatre at the Mill and, you know, different places. But when you hear them being cut, and I know there's so many other issues that are important, but you really are cutting the heart out of a community and out of a country. When you take arts, just enriches so many people's lives and helps mental health. And yet if it's sport, where schools don't, you know, schools, university, if it's sport, there seems to be quite unlimited budgets. But yet I feel that drama and dance and all of these other things, acting, whatever it may be, or small parts, even if it's people, you know, contributing backstage, anything, it makes people feel part of something bigger than themselves, and that is so important. And I think being, whether you're Northern Irish, Irish, or whatever way you identify yourself, we are a land of poets, playwrights, and it's something that we should be really proud of, our cultural heritage, and hold it up for the rest of the world to see.
But we are very short. We are very, very short of money in our budgets generally. And we've just had a mum on there, and I'm not suggesting that she would knock the arts, but she's crying out for additional funding for special needs education. The civil servants at the moment and the government, if we had one, they have to make decisions.
Yes, this is it, Frank. And this is what it keeps coming back to. But I do think it's a terrible shame when our talented, young, good people who would have a lot to offer society, regardless of what background they come from, this is not whether or not people have money or they don't, or class or anything like that. Talented young people are having to leave in droves. And I know it's not only arts, it's a, you know, a lot of university places our children have to leave for, but a lot of them in the arts. If they want to pursue the arts seriously, they can't. Really can't do it in Northern Ireland.
Okay. I do have to leave it there, but Michelle, it's a strong point, clearly made. 90-333-105, 077-66-105-105. We're on our way towards the news at 10 o'clock.
U105. At Wilson Nesbitt, we've helped people all across